Live from New York City, it's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null. Nice to have you with us today. We're going to talk about how a remote Italian village could harbor secrets of healthy aging, University of California study. Also, we're going to look at something calcium does that, well, we weren't aware of. It's more than your bones and the rhythm of your heart and the strength of your muscles. Scripps Research Institute gives us the latest on that. And then when it comes to having the right oils in your body that can protect you against a stroke, there's new research showing that DHA beats EPA for stroke-induced brain damage, and this is from Columbia University Medical Center. We're also going to examine obesity is now linked to 8 more types of cancer. Let's go back almost 20 years when I did a series of programs on the biochemistry of obesity, what actually happens inside your cell when you have more weight on the body than what the body can really handle. I talked about how you can alter DNA. Now we know from Washington University, a new study, that that can put you at risk of 8 more types of cancer just for being overweight. And what's the proof of it? Over 1,000 different medical studies. And also, a good place to get calcium is in fermented foods. I'll explain why. And then we're going to take a look at some social issues that are important. And our talkback segment today will involve a gentleman, a black, talking about why blacks are competing with other blacks, and from his perspective, what that means. After you hear what he has to say, I'd like for you to call in and share your perspective on it on our talkback segment. Also, we have a short audio tape from Mr. Greenwald on why Congress did not want to do anything that exposed the military-industrial complex to scrutiny. We'll play you a short segment from his documentary that explains why we need to know this. Then, of course, there are people who are not up on all the issues, and you can't blame them. There are just so many issues to become concerned about, aware of. That doesn't mean that they're stupid. It doesn't mean that they're misinformed on everything. Most people are highly informed on what's important in their lives. But also there are those people who simply are not up on history, its significance, social issues, their significance, civic activities, its important elements to you. We're going to play you a segment of just random people stopped in an affluent neighborhood and ask about Hillary Clinton wanting to eliminate the Bill of Rights. Now, of course, she doesn't, but they're told that she does. And would they sign a petition agreeing that it's the right thing to do, get rid of the Bill of Rights? You'll find their answers interesting. Also today, I'm going to give some kind of parts of a commentary about what it means to be homeless and the one thing that a lot of homeless people are concerned about. And also, when it comes to the jobs out there, and there are so few that actually are good jobs for millennials, what does it mean in their life? I'll share my commentary on that. And as you see, we have a full show. Then, one of my close sources, who has new information from Julian Assange, an interview that was done yesterday, not yet broadcast released, told me that Assange will be releasing documents tomorrow. Much of what I believe will be in those documents we've already released on our Progressive Commentary Hour, so because we were sharing similar source. But I'll have you listen to Julian Assange in his latest interview from yesterday, something we haven't heard in the United States. The media has not touched on it. And so you're up to date on what he's doing. Let's begin. Most people want to live a longer life, and rightly so, providing that they're not living in pain or in any way they have a limited life. Because I can't tell you how many people have told me that if they had to live longer but live in the pain they are living in, they just don't want to live longer. So part of my goal is to try to find ways to help alleviate the pain without opiates, because that's generally what happens. So it's a trade-off. You'll get the opiates, so you're not in as much pain, but then you lose all cognition. You're not aware of who's in front of you, even if it's a family member. You can't remember anything, and you really are incoherent. And with some types of cancer, like pancreatic cancer, it can be so debilitating in the pain that even the highest levels of morphine won't kill it. And so therefore, you're also losing cognition and in pain. So there's a difference between aging where you're healthy and you're aging, and aging where you're debilitated. We haven't done a whole lot to extend our lifespan. In fact, we were doing pretty good for about the last 40 years. And a lot of those improvements came through one group of Americans, about 10%, beginning to have more healthy foods in the diet, exercising more, and giving up smoking and drinking. But that was only about 10%. Now, that's still about around 33 million Americans. On the other hand, those who are living an unhealthy life have actually made it worse. For example, new ads are suggesting that just a normal hamburger is not enough. You need a double hamburger, and with bacon, and with cheese, and with eggs, and everything else. And even the restaurants that are popular on television now are giving huge portions of food, far more than what the body can process. Now, there are three things wrong with what we're doing today, those who are doing things wrong. One, we're putting more toxins into the body than what the body can possibly process, hence the liver and the kidneys and the colon and intestines are extremely toxic, overburdened. Two, we are also altering DNA. Now, normally, in a normal person's day, you have approximately 10,000 gene alterations per cell per day. Now, give you an idea of the math. Let's just say, for argument's sake, that you're an adult and you have 100 trillion cells. Some people have less, as little as 60. But let's just, argument's sake, say 100 trillion cells. 100 trillion times 10,000. That's how many times a day that different types of free radicals hit your cells. Now, the cell, when you're younger, has the capacity to repair itself and does a pretty good job. But it depends upon how many different ways that you're harming the cell. For example, if you're outside in the sun for more than, let's say, half hour, then you have more vitamin D than what your body can process. Now you're getting damage from the ultraviolet rays, and that is going to be very damaging later in life. Let's say also that you just decide to go to a chiropractor, and the chiropractor wants to give you an x-ray of your spine, or a dentist an x-ray, or a podiatrist an x-ray. You may or may not need it. But what you don't need are the hydroxyl free radicals, the very damaging free radicals going to come from that. And let's say you were hungry, and maybe normally you would go out of your way to eat something healthy, but you don't have anything right in front of you that's healthy, so you're at a party, you're at a restaurant, and so you eat something that is not healthy, that produces inflammation, which would be meat, dairy, sugar, artificial sweeteners, caffeine, artificial coloring agents, preservatives, and alcohol. Well, think how many people will be at a dinner, have alcohol, meat, and carbohydrates, all refined, and finish it off with a sweet dessert. Alone, just in that meal, you're going to have about 100 different chemicals all attacking the body, none helping the body. So the more that we do that's destructive, the more we speed up the telomeres, our protective elements at the end of our chromosomes, and in fact, we shorten them. The quicker they turn over, the shorter they become, the faster we die. We also damage the DNA to where it can no longer repair itself, and then it becomes an altered DNA, and that can lead to cancer. Or epithelial tissue, the lining of our heart, arteries, I should say, that can break off, create clots. Our blood becomes thick. In fact, I used to do this all the time. I would take a group of people who were on a standard American diet, have them eat the diet, and then 3 hours later, take a sample of their blood. And if you look at it, it has all these strings of fat. And you'll see aggregation, clumps of red blood cells. Those could become clots that could lead to an ischemic episode. Now, when you eat a healthy plant-based diet and you have juices, you'll see that the blood is thinner. You want thinner blood, not thicker. When you drink a lot of water, the blood is thinner. It's diluting the blood. You'll see that the red blood cells are not clumping together. You'll see that the blood is brighter. It's oxygenated. So your green vegetable juices are rich in chlorophyll, rich in oxygen, raw enzymes, and that makes your blood thinner. That also gives you many of the nutrients you need to detoxify, to take away the bad debris, and also to help rejuvenate the cells. But the rejuvenation really is primary with your fruits. So by having a good concentration of fruits and vegetables, you're able not only to protect the cells, but to repair them. So now let's say that you're not at 10,000 gene alterations a day because you're not eating garbage or pro-inflammatory foods or beverages like sodas. You're at 2,000 gene alterations. You've reduced the damage to your cell by 80% just by shifting over to a plant-based healthy diet. Now you take the right nutrients that are known to enhance healing of the DNA, repair, and even actually increasing them, like PPQ for more mitochondria, which gives you more energy. So your heart has more energy, your muscles have more energy, your brain has more energy. And NAD, alpha-lipoic acid, coenzyme Q10, vitamin E, vitamin C, B-complex. These are all, along with resveratrol and L-carnosine, these are all anti-aging nutrients. Then you're exercising. Now you go from, let's say, 2,000 gene alterations per cell today to probably 500, because you're going to have some gene alterations because of simply oxidative stress. And every time you inhale, you're bringing oxygen in. When you exhale, carbon dioxide is going out. And then that transfer can create oxidative stress. Normal living creates that. But if you're compensating, what I call the laws of compensation, which mean to the degree that you have any problem, genetic predisposition, or environmental, or nutritional deficiency, or trauma, viral, bacterial infections, heavy metal, anything that imbalances your biochemistry has to be dealt with. So if you're taking your nutrients, doing your juices, not only can you minimize that damage, you can actually prevent it. So that means that now you're no longer your chronological age. You're no longer 45. You're no longer 60. You're no longer 70. You're actually much younger because you've been protecting the DNA. But in America, 90% of Americans have done just the opposite. Now you have to ask, are they doing this because they're unaware of the choices they're making, the consequences, or that maybe they don't care about the consequences? They want what they want when they want it. They have their preferences. They're not going to change. And if something bad happens, so be it. There'll be a drug or something they can take in and be okay. And then there are those people who say, we only know the truth of our choices when we reach our destinations. So if your destination is a stroke, or if your destination is a cancer, if your destination is the loss of memory, that's the issue. But how many people understand that? And so when they reach a destination, more often than not because of crisis, more often than not because their doctor says you must change, or their family members that they don't always pay attention to say you've got to change. And then think of the guilt that is in a family member's mind, especially a spouse. when one spouse is not doing what's right, consistently wrong, occasionally doing something as a token to appease their partner, but then one day they have that stroke or have a heart attack, and then, you know, they feel, I should have been more insistent. No, it's not your place. It's not my place. Like it or not, and boy, this was a hard lesson for me to learn, you must stop at a boundary of appropriate response, even to those you love, unless they're a child. But once they're an adult, you can't force someone to do what is right. You can only encourage them. You can only be an example of what they could do if they chose to. But you can't go in there and tell them, you can't do this anymore. They're just going to resent you. It's going to cause conflict. And more often than not, they'll just double down on what they're doing. You still have to live with the consequences. Did I do as much as I could? Was I as forceful as I could? Did I enable them? These are the questions that go through normal people's minds. So we have a society that is in a challenging position now. Why? Because a whole lot of young people, not all by any means, there are a lot of very health-minded, socially conscious, politically aware millennials, in fact, teenagers, who really go out of their way to do the right thing, and I commend them. But they're probably about 10%. That means 90% are making choices that are only going to have a bad outcome, sooner or later. And the older you get, the sooner those are going to happen. Because remember, you could be 30 chronologically, but because you made all bad choices, you could be 60 biologically. So now we look around our country and we see that we're making wrong choices politically, Democrats and Republicans, those are your two worst, or someone like Gary Johnson, this guy's, well, it's okay that he didn't know where Aleppo was. I'm sure most people wouldn't. But he couldn't even name one political leader in the world. Boy, there's a whole lot that he's missing. But there is still Jill Stein, and she's got her head together on all these issues. But we only have 3% of Americans, including the independents, who want to vote for her because they're more concerned with the lesser of two evils. You're still going to get evil either way. So we're a society that's not exercising. We're eating wrong food and more of it than ever before, just as there are some people eating more good food than ever before. So we have this dichotomy. You would think everybody was eating healthy and eating organic and protesting NGOs and the return of local farming if you watch some of the social media, but it's just not the case. It's like the sexual revolution. At the height of the sexual revolution, only about 3% of Americans participated, either gay or straight. 97% of Americans did not participate in the sexual revolution from the mid-1960s till the mid-1980s, about a 20-year period. But you wouldn't have known that just watching the media. You wouldn't know Americans are unhealthy as they are. So then you have to look around the world, and this is what the University of California did, to see who's living longer. And they found a village. Now this is kind of a unique place. It is a village that was where the University of Rome looked at 300 citizens in this small village. They're all over 100 years of age. They live in this remote Italian village nestled between the ocean and the mountains on the country's coast. And you're talking about a high percentage of the population are very old. Now, they eat a plant-based diet principally. They have extremely strong antioxidants coming into their body from all the things they eat that are local, fresh-grown, and not sprayed. They like Silymarion, which is milk thistle, which is a big part of their diet, and its ability to help the DNA. And they exercise every day in their work. They have strong social bonds. And so just look. You know, when you have a good quality diet, when you have something to live for, when you're happy with your life, and you have people that you can live in a supportive way with, you don't have to prove anything to them. They accept you for who you are, and there are certain standards of behavior that are acceptable and others that are not. And you're also living in an unpolluted environment, in a non-stress environment. So they have the most people living over 100 in good health, than any other place per population on the planet. Now, there are more people in Japan and Okinawa who may be over 100, yes, but they're a much larger population. This is a tiny little population. In my travels to Italy and Spain and France and all these other countries I go to study what people are doing and why they're living longer, I find the same ingredients in every single situation, and here's what it is. The keys to a long life. Number one, more important than diet, exercise, and stress, have something you believe in. Have something you live for that is more than about yourself, more than about your own needs, wants, desires. Have something that is helping other people, that is improving the quality of their life. Have a good support system. Have friends, family, partners that you find joy in, their company and their counsel and their emotions. Happiness is the foundation of all health and longevity. People can laugh. People who are not guarded. People who are not politically correct. They just say what they feel because around people are not going to be all over them every time they misstate something. People who then do the best they can based upon the traditions of knowledge. You see, in other cultures, most of what is handed down is not handed down in writing. It is handed down verbally, where people will talk with one another. That's one of the things I noticed in Italian homes. When you're out in the country, even in Milan, the financial capital and the fashion capital of Italy, I had the benefit of being in a person's home who was a prominent person in the community. And I saw they took 3 hours for a meal, but during that 3 hours, everything in the world you can imagine they talked about, they shared, where people had a chance to share their points of view, and we don't have that here. So we don't have a way of really expressing ourselves, of learning from others who have the knowledge that we do not. In effect, almost all, with some exceptions, almost all of the younger organizations have locked the door on the seniors as if they're smart enough and capable enough, knowledgeable enough, experienced enough to handle all this stuff themselves. They don't need anyone over 50, 60, 70. It's just the opposite of what they should be doing. At some point in your life, please be wise enough to let some wiser people into your life. It'll make a difference. That is how most of the rest of the world lives. We don't. So, just something to show what they're doing that we're not, and they're learning. Separately from Scripps Research Institute, there was a look at what calcium does beyond the bones and beyond the heart and the muscles. This was published in the peer-reviewed journal Cell Reports, and they found that calcium was good for the mitochondria, that's your powerhouse of all cells, and that can impact the development of the brain and your cognition. In particular, the team showed in this study, this laboratory study, how calcium was impacting the blocking channel that engaged in impairment but does not alter learning capacity. Quote, here's from the study, when we knock down the activity of the Uniporter, we found in this study a deficit in memory. This had to do with calcium. So what's the takeaway message in lay language? If we were to use calcium on a daily basis to our body's needs and magnesium, both calcium and magnesium impact the brain, both impact the heart, both impact your musculature, both impact your central nervous system, and now we know both impact memory. So most people never think about their calcium levels when they get older, and then that's the very time that you have to make sure you're getting your calcium every day. I suggest between generally 800 to 1,000 milligrams. And finally, DHA, that's a fraction of the fatty acids. It was more important than EPA for stroke-induced brain damage in this study. And here's what it said in the study. It said, following a brain injury, treating using triglyceride infusion containing the omega-3 form DHA was found to reduce oxidative damage and improve neurological outcomes in short and long term in the study, which appears in the journal PLOS One. And the DHA was found to be most effective. So just in lay language, in order to help a person who's had a stroke, make sure they're taking DHA each day. And if you think being overweight doesn't have a consequence, it does. The New England Journal of Medicine has an article, carrying extra weight is a risk factor for 8 more types of cancer after they reviewed 1,000 medical studies. Now, we know, this audience knows, that obesity is linked to an increased risk of developing cancer, the thyroid, the liver, the stomach, the gallbladder, the pancreas, and the ovaries, plus a brain tumor and multiple myeloma, a blood cancer. So you don't want to increase the risk of these cancers. Now, these in addition to breast cancer, colon cancer, esophageal cancer, kidney cancer, and uterine cancer. So this is new. So if you're overweight, you're really putting your risk, life at risk. Get the weight off and keep it off. I'm Gary Nall. That's the latest on health and healing. Back in a moment. Please stay with us.
Guess what we got today? Now you want to give it all up for another guy. Baby, I'm telling you, don't let dream that fool ya. Don't let it change your mind. It's gonna be hard for me, baby, to build my life all over. But baby, you got the love. Cause if you leave me this way, baby, you know what? I may not live to see a brand new day.
I'd like to welcome you from all over the world. I'm Gary Nall. For those of you who haven't written this number down, please do, because if for any reason you turn on this program, noon to 1, Monday to Friday, Eastern Standard Time, and you don't hear a program, call this number. You can listen to it over the telephone. Now, there's many different numbers, and we have many different numbers because we are expanding exponentially the audience. So here's the number you want to listen to live. I'll buy any portable listening device. Write it down, please. 641 793-7091. 641-793-7091. Now, a lot of people listen. According to our analytics, our average age of our listener is 37, female, college educated, and listening at night. Therefore, we have added a number that you can call anywhere in North America, that means Canada as well, and download the archive show in case you missed a live show. And here's that number. So now, no matter where you travel to, no matter what time of day or night, 24/7, you can call this number over any listening device. 701-719-9976. 701-719-9976. Also, you can watch the program, now that I'm back in our New York studios, by going to the Ustream TV. That's just U-S-T-R-E-A-M TV. Search for Gary Nall. We have a lot coming at you in the next 12 months. I'll be announcing within the next 2 weeks the premiere of my new film. It's a major feature film. That's what I've been working on. Plus, I've also been filming, over the last 3 years, 3 additional films that will be released within the next 12 months. All 4 films. So we've got a lot. And these are very important social films. I'll announce them as they become ready. I'm also going to be interviewing people to do some editing, because we literally have more filming done than we have our editors capable. You have to have experience, but if you have experience you can give my office a call, because we're going to be hiring one or two editors to help us with this huge job. And it pays a good living wage, so you can call 646-926-5422, but only if you have experience. Because we're moving, I mean, we're clicking on all cylinders here. We've got a whole lot coming on. Later this week, either tomorrow or the next day, two back-to-back original in-depth investigative reports. I've completed them. They're in the hands of our attorneys being vetted. And then we have an outside scholars who research them for accuracy. And we are going after some people in institutions who will be named. I won't say more than that, because it's gonna change a whole lot of so-called experts on different topics. That's all I'll say. Really powerful investigative reporting articles as of tomorrow and the next day. Now, here's what we're going to do. We're going to play, it's a short segment, and it's entitled Why Blacks Compete with Other Blacks. This is that person's perspective. Then you'll have an opportunity to call in on TalkBack. Number is 888-874-4888. That's 888-874-4888. And you can share your opinion on this. I'll hold my opinion to after you've shared yours. Let's listen to it now.
The reason why black people are so addicted to materialism is we use materialism to vicariously add wealth to ourselves. In other words, I don't think much of me. I ain't nobody. But if I put these Air Jordans on, I will be. If I buy this house in a white suburb, I will be. You understand? If I get this white woman, I will be. If I get this Louis Vuitton bag, I will be. So we use wealth to replace self-worth. We use materialism to replace self-worth. That's why we're shopaholics. That's why we're always competing with each other. And we got a big issue of self-hate that is always the elephant in the room. I don't care what the ideology is, socialist, nationalist, integrationist, Hebrew, more than the Wapian, God and Earth, Nation of Islam. And we've gotten so bad that the women and the men compete with each other now. So in most other races, the men might compete with each other, but the man and the woman don't compete. You ain't never seen no Chinese woman compete with no Chinese man. You ain't never seen no white man compete with no white woman. But in our community, it's literally everyone's competing with everybody else. So you got a husband and a wife, they competing with each other. So the ego is just out of control because everybody feels worthless. And feeling worthless, the only thing we think can give us a sense of ease is to know we're outdoing other black people. So we're in a rat race to literally outdo other black people. We wake up wanting to look better than them. We wake up wanting to dress better than them. We wake up wanting to make more money than them. Will Smith said what? Black people spend too much money they don't have to buy stuff they don't need to impress people they don't even like. You see, so you'll go out and buy a new car that you don't need and can't afford just so it looks better than the woman next door to you who you don't even know. That's the situation we're in. We literally go into debt for self-hate reasons. We just want to be the HNIC, head Negro in charge. Whether it's the head Negro with the best car, head Negro at the church, head Negro in charge of the community organization, head Negro with the best pocketbook, head Negro with the best looking woman. It's all about the HNIC syndrome. Being one above the rest, and it's killing us because our children are being bred, socialized, and indoctrinated with that same mindset. I see it in the schools. In second grade, they're already knocking each other for dark skin, big noses, nappy hair. In second grade, they're already saying those sneaks ain't worth nothing. I got on Air Jordans. These cost $150. They didn't wake up with that. They're being taught that at home and in the community. So we're literally breeding baby Negroes to take our place.
Your thoughts, please. You've heard his. 888-874-4888. It's a topic that deserves comment. Now, this is a video that was banned in Congress because it exposes the military-industrial complex. This is Robert Greenwald. He was invited to testify before Congress. He prepared to show 4 minutes from his documentary. They wouldn't allow him. We have that clip of what they wouldn't allow. I'll give you my comments, and you could share yours also after you hear this.
Pretty much any job that's in the military, there's a civilian contractor right there.
Across the board, people lost their jobs. Quartermaster companies, mechanic, any logistics soldiers were involved with, their jobs were outsourced to KBR. But when I could be actively becoming a better soldier and becoming more proficient in my job, instead I'm gonna sit up on guard duty It was devastating.
There was so much money being given away over there to contractors. I mean, there were jobs that didn't even need to be there. You know, we'd go into the tent to use our internet, and the woman who would put my name down to assign me to a computer would be a civilian contractor who was making six figures to be over there. But why is she there? Why are we paying this woman to do this? It certainly affected retention.
They took over my job. I ended up doing nothing.
I don't know why any military person would re-enlist to do the same job when they could get out of the military and make, you know, six times the money and do the same job.
They had the little mobile units that we had to put our clothes in, like a net duffel bag. Halliburton charged the government $100 for every bag of clothes they washed.
I was told by my chain of command that I was not allowed to wash my laundry on my own. I had to take it to KBR to have it washed, even though we all knew that they were doing a horrible job, because they get $99 a bag for a bag of laundry that I could do at home for $3.
Cost Plus encourages you to run up the cost of a program, because you are going to get a percentage of the end result. And so there's no incentive to stay at Motel 6. Stay at the Ritz-Carlton in Qatar, folks.
The place that they chose for orientation in Kuwait was a huge resort set right on the ocean. They had five-star meals catered in every day.
It was so lavish. Rows of vegetable platters, beef platters, fish platters.
It's a cost-plus contract. KBR looked at it, the more money we spend, that's more money we get in our pockets. They got the wrong equipment, ordered the wrong stuff, computers still in boxes, new vehicles. They'd push them out in what they called burn pits, and they just set it on fire, claim it as a loss, get more money for the right equipment or the right stuff they needed.
You got brand new trucks over there, and there's not even oil filters.
So when the motor blows, what do? Buy a new truck and bill the government.
$75,000 truck, they wouldn't even have a spare tire to fit it, and we had to blow it up. And they didn't care Halliburton didn't, because the government's paying for it.
The legal way of stealing from the government or taxpayers' money.
Khaki was used to do interrogation in Abu Ghraib.
تم نقلي إلى سجن أبو غريب في بداية عام 2004 باليوم الأول من الشهر الأول لعام 2004.
كان أكو شخص مدني واقف بيتأمر يعني يأخذون أوامرهم من عنده أمنية مدنية للتحقيق مع معتقلين. بس أنا أقول لك هاي شركتين مؤكدة، شركة تايتن وشركة CACI.
One of the problems that we run into when we're outsourcing so much of our intelligence operations is that they're just trying to fill the slots to make the money to keep their shareholders happy.
As a result, a lot of people got hurt, a lot of people got killed, American lives got lost because someone wants to make money and wants to have a fat check in his pocket.
Halliburton, KBR, some of these other firms over there are staying over there and continuing to make profits, big money. And people are just at the cost of human life.
Now, that's a short clip from Robert Greenwald. Here are a couple other things we should consider. This is a report from Tom Dispatch, Homeland Security, a trillion-dollar concept that no one can define, by Matte Kramer and Chris Hellman. Quote, imagine a labyrinth. Government departments so bloated that few have any clear idea of just what its countless pieces do. Imagine that tens of billions of tax dollars are disappearing into it annually, black hole style, since it can't pass a congressionally mandated audit. Now imagine that there are two such departments, both gigantic, and you're beginning to grasp the new 21st century American security paradigm. It goes on to talk about how that the different departments of government are outsourcing to thousands upon thousands of private contractors. That's what they were just referring to. And they all have these contracts called cost plus. So everything that it costs them to build a missile, to wash a laundry, it doesn't take $100 to wash a simple duffel bag of dirty clothes, it takes about a dollar. With soap suds in a washing machine, industrial washing machine, that's all it takes. But they're making money on that, plus they're getting a profit on top of it. Now, multiply that times 100,000 contracts per year, 200,000 companies per year, trillion plus dollars, trillion and a half dollars per year. And those are the people who feed off our fear. Those are the people who will say, well, we're providing jobs. For example, did you know that we had as many private contractors being paid as much as $1,200 to $1,500 per day to be in Iraq, guarding, let's say, the State Department employees, or guarding whoever's there, than we had regular soldiers? The regular soldiers could have done the work, but this is where the money is made. They make huge amounts of money. There was a time when there was very little outsourcing. Most of what was done inside the military was done by the military. But then it was shown that you can make a lot more money if you're an ex-general, an ex-admiral, an ex-senator, ex-house member, ex-chief of staff of a chairman of a committee, to then work together to form a company, and you might be 20 companies deep doing the same identical work, all getting the same identical contracts, and it won't make a difference because no one is ever held accountable. No one ever goes to jail. No one ever has to give back the money. No one ever is brought on the carpet, and hence you end up with $15,000 coffee urns. You end up with $800 hammers. You end up $100 to wash your laundry. And then you end up with $5 billion in cash, actual cash, that was stolen. The biggest theft in history. $5 billion. And it was like nothing, because no one was held accountable, and we didn't get it back, and we never get it back. Now put this in context. You and I are supposed to pay our taxes so that this continuing feeding at the corporate trough with government working with hand in hand with private contractors and big corporations, that's fascism. And yet this is the new order, and it's been going on for a long time. But the average person is simply overwhelmed by it. They don't think in trillions like the new, for example, Obama's new program to bring in a whole new generation of nuclear weapons. Well, hold on, didn't he get the Nobel Prize for, and didn't he say when he was running for president back in 2007, 2008, that we have to get rid of nuclear? Yeah. And now he's making a $1 trillion plus, and it'll go probably $3 or $4 trillion, for a whole group of individuals, new corporations, to make a whole new generation of nuclear weapons. What about all the thousands of nuclear weapons we have? Well, like all the jets that we never flew, like all the other things we buy that become redundant, which means they're no longer operational, so we just warehouse them out in the desert or in a bunker. But no one will ever say, do we need all this? The answer is no. And it is my opinion the next war will not be a nuclear war. It will not be a major land war. It'll be a cyber war. And I believe that if Hillary Clinton is elected, it'll be within 2 years, and it'll be Israel getting the nod to go ahead and do a cyber war and then a nuclear war against Iran. Why do I suggest that? Is it just some form of projection, paranoia? No. We have found out that there were two malwares, two super sophisticated bugs that were put into Iran's system. One, which was done with Israel's Mossad and the National Security Agency, CIA, and Hillary Clinton and Obama. We wanted to destroy their centrifuges so that they, even though that there has been, the International Atomic Energy Commission has been in Iran constantly with cameras in every single room, with locks that have special passes that are monitored 24/7, and they're not building any nuclear bombs. And those who know that have told everyone else this, but that doesn't suit the agenda of the neocons. So they got the idea, let's destroy these. And they destroyed them by putting in a malware that would cause the centrifuges to dysfunction and explode. and it at the same time would cause the computers to show that everything was normal, but it wasn't normal. And this went on for some time. Then some outside people, two who specialize in trying to track down corporate espionage and malware, took them months, and they finally figured out how this was done, who would have the capability of doing this. What they also found out that no one knew in the United States is that Israel had planted a second secret malware, and this was to turn off all power in Iran, meaning all electricity, the satellites, the phones, all computers, nothing that was based upon electricity would work. And it would be off for some time, and it would be hidden in the systems. Okay, that would be very inconvenient for some 84 million people living in a country three times the size of Iraq, but why would you do it? What could possibly be a motive? Well, one possible motive would be the long flight that it takes to go from Israel into Iran if you're going to do a bombing mission. So now, Iran would know you were coming, have no way of detecting you. You could go in and do the damage and get back safely. Now, how likely would it be that if you were the planners of this, that you would just take out their nuclear facilities, which is still peaceful? It's never been proven to be for offense. I believe, and it's my belief, that if they were that maniacal, they would know that Iran, with over a million people under arms and trained for the type of urban war, but not the big war, would go after them. So it's my belief that they would destroy everything humanly possible they could do that could respond in Iran. The casualty rate using a special type of new nuclear device would be into the millions or tens of millions of dead. America would say it was justified. All the neocons would get up and justify it. We prevented a major threat, just like we did Libya, just like we did Iraq with Saddam Hussein, just like we did with, been trying to do with Syria. But then whatever is left of a country is going to respond. They're going to respond to Saudi Arabia, Qatar, United Arab Emirates, Kuwait, and Israel. And then you're going to see all types of responses. Well, now that Iran has figured this out, and China and Russia figured it out, they hired thousands of geeks, paid them a lot of money to come in and figure out how to protect their security, their internet system from this happening. But what is the likelihood that these three countries or others have gone ahead to create their own devices to plant on our electrical system? And here's the difference. What would happen in the United States if all the electricity went out and we couldn't get it back on? After 5 to 30 days, our nuclear plants would go Fukushima because we only have to have 1 week to a maximum of 4 weeks of backup fuel. What would happen to the 20 million people living within 50 miles of Indian Point, 35 miles north of New York? What would happen to Abel Canyon that would be impacting everyone in Los Angeles if these went Fukushima? You see, the media is not discussing it. No one is talking about it. But that's what happens when you think you're the best and brightest and you become a part of the neocon mindset and you start spending money that's not yours, it's the American public, and the American public doesn't know where their money is spent, but at least 56% or 56 cents out of every dollar in taxes go to this complex. And it's bad to the bone. It's corrupt, and we have no say-so because the average person is simply overwhelmed by the concept to understand all this. And so they just detach from it and look for something that's easy to apply their insight to. Those are my thoughts. I'd like yours. 888-874-4888. Call. Let's say hello to Sherry. Sherry, your turn.
Hi, Gary.
Hi.
I want to respond to the clip on why blacks compete with blacks. I do agree with him. I think this goes back to the conditioning during slavery and segregation, in which the self-esteem of black people was destroyed in order to have them controlled by the slave masters. And that's deeply ingrained. Conditioning is really, negative conditioning has been a very large part of the situation with black Americans. And I have a friend who worked in various school systems around New York and New Jersey. She is a Jewish woman, and she told me in the black schools that black people would not help each other. So it's just a cultural situation. And this is American blacks. I don't think it's true for West Indian black people as much, because they do much better than American blacks. And I think this is really has to do with conditioning and generations of conditioning. And I don't know how you change that. I don't know how to change that.
Okay, let's look at something you said. I believe that it gives us an opportunity, both in the African-American, Latino, or the Caucasian and Asian communities, when you become successful and you become an object of attention and people look up to you, I believe it is that moment that we should start looking at the austerity of our lifestyles and the abundance of our wisdom that we're willing to share. Be an example of what is possible with your success. So instead of getting someone to want the latest things, look deeper into an issue and realize that happiness doesn't come by focusing your energy on what you purchase as an object of being satisfied. I have a car, therefore I'm happier. Or if I had the right relationship, I'd be happier. No, it doesn't come from that. And who best to teach that? People who are happy, people who are balanced, people who are not using materialism or consumerism, which is also part of the ingraining and enculturation and propaganda of a capitalist-based society. So you must also bring in the economic model that we use to judge ourselves. The quality of our life is based upon what we possess, how far we've gone, how much we make, where we live, what we wear. And whether you're black or white doesn't matter. It's something that all of us should stop for a moment and ask, do I really need all this stuff in order to feel good about myself? And what about building other qualities? The quality of care, compassion, a warm personality, an engaging personality, caring about others, working within your community, helping, be a big brother, big sister. These are also important virtues, and many Americans do engage in those. And we don't see enough of them. More often than not, within our society, those who exploit their success, that then becomes a model for others, no matter what their race, are exploiting their excesses, the excesses of what wealth, power, celebrity provide them. And there are also, in my opinion, far more, 1,000 times more people who do just the opposite. They don't need a red carpet. They don't need a commercial. They don't need to show what they're endorsing to make a point. They do so in a more subtle, more humane, and more spiritual way. I appreciate your input. Thank you, Sherry. We'll take one quick call from Anne. Hi, Anne. Your turn.
Hi, Gary. So good to speak with you, and thank you for all the good that you do for us. I'm going to make this brief. I went to see Snowden last night, and it relates to the comments you made a short while ago regarding our intrusion in the internet world, whatever you want to call it. It's a must-see movie for all Americans, because I know so many of us are clueless, and this gives you a real deep and worthwhile 2 hours spent, honestly. It's a must-see for everybody. I had him high on my esteem list prior to this. Right now, he is soaring. I mean, what he did was, I think, the greatest thing that he could have done for America. Unfortunately, Americans haven't responded the way we probably all should. And I'm certain we probably never will.
And I saw the movie, too. And what was remarkable from my perspective when I saw it was that Snowden was for the military-industrial complex, patriotism, American exceptionalism. He would have fit right in as a commentator on Fox Network. Instead, he saw how the system had abused the trust of Americans, broken the law, and were violating our privacy rights on a national and worldwide basis, spying on other governments. He wanted to tell that story. He did so knowing that he would be destroyed in the process. That takes enormous courage. That's a real hero, the guy who falls on the grenade, that he takes the damage rather than those around him. He did this for us, not for himself. And instead of the media and the politicians respecting that he exposed corruption and crimes against humanity, they now want to lynch him because they say he broke the law. Well, any law that protects those who are engaging in illegalities, the law is wrong. is morally reprehensible. And remember, we still have the Nuremberg judgments, which say that you do not have to follow a law, obey a law, go along with something because you were given orders if you know that it is wrong. He found it was wrong. We owe Snowden an enormous debt of gratitude. He is a true American hero. Thank you, Anne, for your call. And I want to thank all you for listening. I'm Gary Nall. Have a nice day.
It's a shame the way you hurt me. It's a shame.